Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week, and yeah, this is not a rerun, I promise. This week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your struggling to make sense of it all host, Christopher Hart. I'm happy to see you guys. I am very happy to see you guys. Your messages over the past couple of weeks about missing the show has been it's been heard. We've been trying to stay quarantined for the time being, to stay safe. You know, I've got some. My mother-in-law is real old, so I love you, Kim. And yeah, we just wanted to be safe for everybody, and yeah. So it's been wild, right? So, but I'm gonna get into the ad reads, but I want to talk to everybody for a minute first. I'm gonna cover it in the episode, but I'm gonna briefly skim it now. If Jack, if you can put up a website right here, right there, that says stillstrongtx.com, I'd greatly appreciate it. But if you guys can help out, for the past month or so, distilleries all over the state of Texas and all over the U.S. have been making hand sanitizer for hospitals, for first-line responders, for people who need it, and have been doing it, been giving it away, doing everything they can to help out. So that has caused a great financial burden in order to just sustain that, right? So currently, there are a couple laws in the state of Texas that prevent distilleries from mailing you a bottle, from delivering you a bottle, from selling you more than two bottles in 30 days. And we are asking, as well as the Texas Whiskey Association is asking, petitioning the governor to temporarily suspend these laws in TABC code that prevent very simple things that could help increase revenue for these distilleries, on top of the fact that they've been sacrificing money to help out their communities. They've been unable to have people buy, right? Everything's been quarantined. So distillery sales are down 60 to 80%, depending on the distillery. We may lose. They're not asking for a bailout. They're not asking for any money from you. They're asking for the government, the governor, Greg Abbott, to basically do what he needs to do to lift these restrictions and allow these things to happen. So if we could please go to stillstrongtx.com, you just got to fill out your name and your email, and there's already a nicely worded message that can be sent to the appropriate people. And it takes 2 seconds for you to do that, as well as share. Still Texas, STILL, sorry, Still Strong Texas, STILL, Strong, TX.com. And I'm sure Spencer's listening to that. It's like, no, it's TX, not Texas. Yeah, so stillstrongtx.com. Additionally, this episode, I got to sit down with a good friend of mine for the past couple of years who've helped produce the show, the guy that I report to here at ESPN, Mr. Brandon Strange. Brandon has had his plate full. ESPN's had their plate full here in Houston, trying to figure out what things are going to look like over the next coming weeks and months. So we sit down, we talk about what's happened, the damage we've seen so far, how people are coping with it, and I wrap the whole episode up pleading you to find a better way to cope with what you're reading, the sensationalism, the anger. Find a better way to please, 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 if you see something, don't say something. let people vent online. They can come off as crazy. They can come off as upset. They're obviously all going through stuff. Let them do that. Don't engage. Don't argue with them. Don't judge them. Let them vent, and we'll all come out on the other side of this a little less angry and with a few more friends. So today's episode is, as always, I haven't said that in about a month. Man, I'm really sorry, guys. sponsored by Terlato Distill Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Bunahabin, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and of course, Scottish Leader. You could pick up the entire line at your local liquor store after quarantine, spacing out and enforcing social distancing rules. Please do that at your local liquor store. Glass River Imports. Whiskey Neat is supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass River Imports and Amroot Distilleries. I didn't bring an Amroot bottle today. I did, however, bring a Blackadder Red Snake. These are part of the Raw Cask series. If you go to my Instagram, I recently posted about them. I'm so in love with these scotches. They're younger, single malt, cask strength scotches that are completely unfiltered, and there is full barrel char. I don't know if you can see that in the camera there, but full barrel char floating in that thing. Absolutely delicious. We call those Texas tea leaves. Whiskey Neat is supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass River Imports and Amroot Distilleries. Amroot crafts one of the most award-winning single malts, Indian single malts, to the exact same standards of Scotch. They've won a bunch of awards. They can be found everywhere. We're huge supporters of them. And we actually have barrel samples that are waiting to be picked the moment that we can get some real people in the studio. Today, joined by Brandon, who works on site, we stay the appropriate, I think WHO recommends, 4 to 6 feet. I think we're about 4 feet away from each other, and we breathed across from each other. So try to cut us a little bit of a break there. I don't know if I'm going to... I'm trying to get things back up and running, but things are real weird right now. So I don't know if we'll have one next week. I'm working on it. The today's episode was so important, specifically because distilleries in Texas are struggling, and they could use a little consideration. So your help, not your money. No one's asking for money. Your help is simply to, and even if you're out of the state of Texas, fill the form out, submit it, and support those who've been supporting our communities and those who need it. So, and then share it to social media. So without further ado, I really appreciate you guys. You do see in front of me, we have our Robusto release, which drops tomorrow. Just to recap that real quick, Eventbrite, today at noon, so you're hearing this tomorrow, today at noon on our Eventbrite page is the Houston Whiskey Social Robusto drop. The tickets are free to claim. You just have to claim them. There's going to be less than 50 of them available. You have to claim them immediately, and your bottle is reserved under your name and email address in store. We don't need your tickets. You don't need to print them. But when you go in, give them your name and email address. They'll mark you off. They'll sell you your bottle. The cost is $105, which incorporates the cost of having these boxes made. That was a special occasion. Cut me a break. And less than 50 bottles are being made available to the public. Everything else went to the Whiskey Social. So cheers. I do want to say it feels really weird being back.
Yeah.
It's been about, I think, a month, right? Give or take. It's been a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. I know a lot of people have lost their jobs, myself included. So I thought it would be great if we came in today, had a drink, and talked about a little bit of... Everyone was talking about as it was building up, but talk about everything that's happened. And, of course, we have something cool that that drops this weekend. I thought you can taste it first.
That's so
awesome. I actually have not tasted it since we picked it in November. I have no idea what to expect. But I have a
hint.
You
don't. I don't even know what to expect. I didn't even know I was going to get a sneak preview of this. So that's awesome.
Yeah. So basically, every year the Whiskey Social buys one or two, sometimes more barrels to give away at the event. And this year, all the Pappy Van Winkle holders were slated to get a bottle of this. We thought that this pick reminded us so much of tobacco. We got a lot of tobacco on the profile. I thought it'd be cool if we made a custom-made cigar box for it.
That's awesome.
So it took some time. It took a few months, and of course, Corona delayed everything. The boxes actually came from China, and I Googled it.
Corona the virus, not Corona the beer.
Yeah, Corona the virus. Yeah, but I checked, but it can't survive the transit time.
Good.
In mail. So my wife was like, "You're gonna spray the boxes down?" I was like, "No, well, we're not gonna spray the boxes down." So I thought we could probably start there.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah,
I've got a couple other bottles of scotch here. Bear with me. Yeah, so there's your little, those who can see it, just a nice little custom-made box for it. It sits right in there. We had a lining made that kind of resembles what they bale tobacco in.
Okay.
So it's just
like a burlap.
Yeah, a little burlap.
Like
yeah, just a little sits right there. For those wondering, it is a tier 3, 57.3% ABV. Whiskey Pete's right there on the box. The city of Houston's on the front there, too.
That's sweet.
It's pretty neat. Todd Grube, who probably deserves to be here. I didn't invite him. So,
and fittingly, that's a courthouse on the front, right?
Yeah, that's the... So yeah,
there you go.
That's the courthouse, right?
Drink too much of it, that's where you'll end up.
So, okay, let's do this.
Yeah.
No. I don't know about you, man. Actually, I do know about you. You've had quite a few... You work in management here, and
yeah.
So you've had quite a bit on your plate.
I have, and I don't want to... obviously, you know, anything that I complain about here, I just want to, like... put this preface out there first, is that I know everything is relative and there's people that are really hurting out there, health-wise especially. So
sure.
Anything that we complain about, take with a grain of salt. It's just two dudes venting at this point. At least, you know, for me, it's and I know you've been more acutely affected by that than I have, but we've been affected here. You know, there's been salary adjustments because of, you know, we're in sports, so there's a lack of revenue coming in because there's just no sports to talk about.
Sure.
And ironically, I think that's kind of when this all hit home for me. And I don't know, you know, we can get into like, you know, how this compares to other, you know, things, you know, landmark moments in our lives. But very much like 9/11, like I remember where I was at when I really understood how serious this was. And it was the night when the NBA games got canceled, when, you know, we found out that Rudy Gobert had contracted coronavirus, and then they just stopped the game. Like there was, you know, they were about to start the second game of a doubleheader, and they just, the refs came out and were like, that's it. Like, we're not going to have this game. And then once they suspended the season, I think that was when it really hit home for me that this is really going to be, this is going to change life, you know, for, because this isn't just going to be this that shuts down. If they're shutting down a $1 billion business, a international game, this is going to be serious. And there's going to be, you know, ramifications that are, you know, going to be like weeks, if not months out. Now we know it's, you know, going to be months.
So I agree completely. I 8 weeks ago, and I think I might have said this on the last episode I did with Pasha, we had a trip planned for France leaving yesterday. And we were supposed to be gone through the middle of May, and trip had all been planned, paid for. We'd already paid for everything, flights, everything. And I just couldn't fathom that our actual economy would be completely shut down for 6 weeks,
yeah.
Let alone flights and everything else. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And it makes you wonder, this is a glaring loophole in our system. And there was a viral video that kind of has been circulating. Have you seen the video of the guy that looks like he's got a Boston, New York accent ranting in his car about how $1,200 is bullshit? I forgot we don't have a way to mark those.
That's it. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. This is internet only, right?
Yeah.
So.
Oh well, unless it's going to air, I don't know.
We can do it on air. That's fine too. We'll do it live. All right, so we'll mark it 6 minutes. There you go.
There you go. We marked it. Yeah. So there's a video going around of a guy in his car, and he's making such complete sense. There's a stimulus in place that's supposed to give what, $1,200 a person, $500 per kid,
yeah.
And it's a one-time thing.
Yeah.
That's going to save some.
Right.
It's going to do hardly anything
for
a good majority of middle America.
Right.
And it would only take care of them this month.
Right.
And currently there's procedures in place that basically, like, well, Wells Fargo's not going to foreclose on your home in the next 3 months, but at the end of those 3 months, you have to pay all four of the last months. You have to, or the last 3 months, you have to basically catch up all at once. But how are you supposed to do that?
It
makes no sense,
yeah,
right?
It makes no sense.
This is why, so this guy is ranting and raving in his car talking about how you should just move everything back a month. You've got a house that's been in good standing. They've been paying on it for 10 years, a 30-year note. Delay, remove these 3 months, put them on the back end.
Right.
You'll make money.
Right.
Because it cuts the guy a break, gives him a chance. And for those who are naysaying me, you can shove it right up your booty because, and I watched it that time.
There you go.
Shell Federal Credit Union. Shell Federal Credit Union has, without me making a phone call, without me even needing to, they just moved everyone's car loans back to May.
Right.
To May.
Yeah.
I don't owe, I didn't owe a car payment and two car payments in March and April, and it might be pushed back to June by now. Yeah. But they're gauging their audience. They don't want anyone to default on these things right. and lose money on yeah. it. Why can't we just have an executive order in place, a protocol
yeah.
that simply says we are everything top to bottom? From because the problem is the reason why your landlord's not cutting your break is because the bank's not cutting him a break.
Right.
And because the bank, where they're not being cut a break either.
Right.
And if everyone was just cut a break all the way top down, pause yeah. the economy for 3 months.
Right.
Let's pick it back up. And those missing a job, you know, obviously unemployment can help pay food.
Sure.
Right? But you wouldn't need that extra. If all you had to worry about was food and all your debts and
yeah.
student loan payments and yeah. that sort of thing, if all those things were furloughed for 3 months,
yeah.
then the amount being paid out by unemployment could be dropped to just food.
Yeah.
Right. So right. you got a family of six. Here's $300 a month or $300 every 2 weeks or whatever you want to call it versus paying the whatever the max is for unemployment and another $600 for the stimulus. It seems like just a completely bad idea the way that this is handled. And I'm not tipping my hat to left or right.
Absolutely. No, there's plenty of blame to go around on both sides. I think it's interesting. Before we dig into this,
I'm not cheersing you. Yeah,
yeah, we're not going to cheers, but we'll do it. You usually cheers at the end of the episode, so we'll cheers at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
I'll cheers to better times. How about
absolutely.
That? I do think it's interesting that we have asked, as a country, we've asked seemingly middle America to be the ones who put their lives on pause, to not go to work and to not make money and to take the brunt of this, but it hasn't really been an even distribution of impact, right? We're not pausing everything, to your point, like from the top down pausing it and giving forbearance to people who need it the most. You talked about your car payment. Similarly, for government-held student loans, which are now all held, that's all student loans now because of legislation a few years back, but now you know, the government oversees all student loans that were subsidized loans from back in the day. So the people who administer my loan sent a message and were just like, you know, your loan, obviously it's part of the stimulus package, but your loan is basically, you know,
on hold.
Is on hold, and you don't have to pay it until September. And they actually told me they have it in the note, if you were automatically drafted after March 13th, you can just apply through your banking institution to get that back. And I did, and I got it back within 24 hours of applying for the refund. That is so helpful right
yeah.
now. I mean, and it's, I mean, because it's kind of crippling otherwise. I mean, I really, you know, like many other people are burdened with that student loan repayment. But the fact that that's getting, you know, we're getting a forbearance on that until September is so meaningful for me right now and really helping out, because we are taking a reduced salary right now because there isn't advertising. There's no events to advertise. There's no, you know, restaurants are open for business to allow people to come in. So they're not going to advertise. Like, marketing budgets are literally the first thing to go when companies are struggling. And so you can imagine they're going to be the first thing to go. They will be the last thing to be reinstituted. And so I'm in a company that our products are all based on and supported by
people getting together.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in-person things.
Yeah.
Advertising and events. And we base our content around those things because they're sporting events. Those are all on hold. You know, we're hearing rumblings that maybe, you know, baseball could begin in you know, May, June, something along those lines, with maybe limited crowd or no crowd, depending on what the model looks like. But that's tough. It is tough to, you know, first of all, to bridge that gap until then, because we're all sat, you know, the news is saturated. We're all jumping on the same things to cover. You're not going to hear that big of a difference between what we're talking about, what ESPN's talking about.
Yeah,
because there's only a few things to talk about. How stupid Bill O'Brien is, and the NFL draft, and end of list. You know, that's it.
Sports related, at least. Right. There's a couple of things.
Sure.
Carol Baskins.
Absolutely. And those things definitely make their way onto our airwaves because we have to talk about something besides sports. So, yeah, Carol Baskin does make the cut.
I have done everything from, and I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but I know I mentioned to you, I was furloughed. I work in private aviation, and aviation, private charters, all these rich people going places. There's nowhere to go.
Right.
Everyone's shut down. You're not allowed to go.
Yeah.
And they held on for a long time. I know there was recently someone who tried to land, I think, in either Ireland or the UK under a false reason, and it turned out to just be a vacation, and they were quarantined.
Wow.
And fined and then sent back. And that's – but you go from dealing with literally thousands of flights a day to nothing. Our in-person company went from like 2,000 people down to 500 people, like that.
That's insane.
And you know, it's the whole thing is just really fascinating. It's fascinating to think about the impact. It's fascinating to think about the loophole in our system.
Yeah.
How we're that vulnerable.
Yes.
That all it takes is for this to happen. And I'm gonna tell you, it's gonna get to a point where. I wouldn't be surprised if riots happened. Wouldn't be surprised.
No, people, I agree.
People are refusing.
I agree.
I mean, the judge that made the order that has come Monday, we better all be wearing masks in public.
Yeah.
That's not going to go over well. And right. It didn't go over well. I know that right. The police union guy, I don't know if you saw that letter.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so the head of the police union wrote a letter on his stance on this, basically encouraging cops not to follow that order.
Sure.
Don't use discretion. Don't be fining people
right.
just to fine people
right.
and generate revenue.
Now is the very wrong time to be fining people. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think as we roll up on a break here, I'd like to talk to you on the other side about something where I think is another weakness in our system that is a possible contribution to all this unrest in a very vulnerable time right now as well.
One of the things that I've realized is just crazy is how unstable the restaurant industry is.
Yeah.
Right? It's even Tilman Fertitta being the billionaire that he is.
Yeah.
No one prepared for this. No one really knew to prepare for this. And it's funny because over the past 10 years, we've seen pandemics come. Mm-hmm. Zika, Ebola. Ebola mm-hmm. got real scary for a minute.
Yeah.
But this is unprecedented waters.
Yeah.
So what do you think... moving forward, even those wanting to invest in restaurants, should there be a fund? Should there be, I know when you format pricing for a menu, you account for rent and labor. Should there be a $1 per meal, maybe side fund that sets money aside for when a pandemic comes within 5 years? As long if that movie, or you keep a certain amount in there so that your business can run for 4 months during a pandemic. 4 months seems safe. 6 months is even better.
Yeah.
Should we be? I know the margins are slim already. When it comes to restaurant industry, it's not super profitable unless you have a chain like Landry's. But what do you? I mean, it's not just them. It's everybody. What do you?
It is. I tell you, I don't. I know what I don't know, and I'm not super well versed in hospitality. I know of it. Peripherally, because I have friends and family that are in it. And I know they are, I mean, they have no net, you know what I mean? And most of these people live off of cash tips.
Yeah.
They're completely dependent upon that. And when this goes away, there's nothing for them. And so that's what I look to first, because, and it's not to be indifferent or to be unsympathetic to what a guy like Tilman Fertitta is going through. But we know Tilman Fertitta is going to bounce back. Like Tilman Fertitta has, a net worth, a reputation where he will continue to get loans and will continue to be able to have business on the other side of this. Where I look at is the everyday person, the workers that are affected acutely by this, because there is no net for them. They're, you know, outside of, you know, a one-time stimulus payment. Outside of whatever forgiveness or forbearance they may get on their bills personally, there's really no net for them. People who were working on contract basis, doing events, that's completely dried up.
Yeah, I'm glad the Whiskey Social was at the beginning of February.
It's right? crazy, right? That's crazy.
It would have been crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't even know how to resolve that sort of thing, right?
So yeah.
What do you do when you put six figures into an event or something and it just goes away?
Right. No, to answer your question, I look at one of the amazing things that kind of came from this was a revelation that I had from it was just kind of seeing how people responded and how businesses responded. And that night that I spoke of when the NBA was suspended, this NBA season was suspended for this, one of the first things out of Mark Cuban's mouth was taking care of his hourly workers. And I thought that was just so, it's just so telling that somebody, that's their one of their first thought is, I need to protect the people who are most vulnerable. And maybe that's just politicking. Maybe that's just him saying the right thing because he's good at PR, because he is. Maybe that's what it is, but I didn't get that thought. My thought was, this seems to be genuine. He seems to be genuine about that. And then a company like HEB, who
they've been schooling
everyone on supply chain, absolutely schooling everyone on supply chain. When everyone else is out of stuff, HEB's got it. And you know, we're first with restrictions, like customer restrictions within the store. But they had stuff, like, and it stores having supplies gives hope because you're not panicked as much. Like, you got to wait for it, and there's a line for it, but it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
And when you go to stores, and I'm not going to name which stores, but
name it. Walmart.
There are stores that are direct competitors out there that still don't have paper towels, that still don't have toilet paper, that still don't have pasta. And you know, we can get into the merit of hoarding those things. That's a completely different topic. But a lot of those stores still are short on those things, whereas HEB is thriving. You know, they're hiring and giving raises to their people in the midst of what is otherwise uncertainty and instability in the rest of the industry. So kudos to them, man. I really respect their game during all this. And granted, they learned this, supposedly, as I've read, that they learned this from the hurricane.
Yeah.
And so they've taken what they've learned from that and have put back supplies. They do have a storage. And that ties into what your question was, should there be some fund, you know, that...
Some considerations for a rainy day.
Yeah, a net.
Yeah.
And so that it's just interesting that a company like HEB, which has been highly successful and clearly have supply chain figured out to a level that their competitors do not, it's interesting that they learned so much from different disasters and, you know, it's seemingly other companies have not. And they just have really led the way with that. And so, to your point, yeah, I think there are hospitality companies that have an opportunity to learn from this and be the HEB version of this, where if something like this were to happen again, and there's no reason to think that this won't happen again. There's no reason to think that, you know, a pandemic, you know, can't be repeated and can't be repeated within a short time. It would be interesting to see if anyone in the hospitality industry uses this information, uses this example as a way to fortify their company, reinforce their company with that sort of safety net. I would love to see that. I'd love to see a company come out of this really, really strong and hope maybe it is for Tita. I don't know, but I just hope that we learn something from this because I think that's what we can really take from this. You know, there's people that are sick, you know, deathly ill. There's people that are dying from this. There are people that are going to be financially ruined from this. Businesses that are going to be shuttered forever. What I hope a positive
I'm
from that would be.
I'm hoping it's not industries.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's not complete industries.
I hope not either. I don't think so. And that's just hopeful. That's optimism. But I hope people can learn from this. That's what I hope, is that there's something. And I hope that people individually learn something from this. You know, maybe I shouldn't live paycheck to paycheck if I don't have to.
Yeah, the problem is a lot of people
don't have a choice.
Don't intentionally mean to live paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely.
They just are paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely. And I don't want to victim blame here either.
Sure.
There's people that are in a bad spot that are there because of no fault of their own. And so I don't want to do, but we both know, and we both know people that, you know, live beyond their means a little bit because they make a good amount of money. And they don't see these types of things coming around the corner. And so maybe this will provide an opportunity for all of us, myself included. I know I've learned a lot, you know, just how we can be better prepared. And I think sometimes it does take a reality check. And I don't want to trivialize this to be, you know, some just a learning lesson or an after school special, but it really is. We should all try to take glean as much information from this as we can so that we can be better prepared for things like this.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that almost like, I hate to compare it to drug addicts, but John Jones, right? So John Jones, Dr. Drew was talking about John Jones's fourth DWI and everything he's going through, and said that in order for things to get better, it's going to have to all fall apart. If we come out of this relatively unscathed, specifically the higher ups, the rich or the wealthy that feel like this didn't go that bad, we aren't going to learn from it.
No, we're not.
So it's almost like things have to completely fall apart for us to say, okay, enough is enough. We're putting this in place for future reference. I mean, the discussion of a safety net, if we did have a protocol in place to furlough loans top to bottom, instead of lowering interest rates, instead of deferring payments, but then you have to pay it all up front at once.
Yeah.
If we had something in place that just basically halted things for 3 months, and then we can fast forward it, boom.
Yeah.
The only thing you have to worry about is feeding people, which is so much easier than trying to feed people and kind of pay some of their bills.
Yeah.
And then they've got to decide which bills to pay, what to go negative on, what's going to ruin their credit. I mean, the whole thing is a bit crazy. Did you see the discussion with Joe Rogan about the test controversy? People were furious at him for talking about how he tests each one of the people that come on a show because of the antibody test. The perception was simply that a lot of people out of work, a lot of people who are struggling to get by are furious about Rogan talking about how he tests each guest that come on because he's got access to it. He's rich, right?
Yeah.
The thought being that he somehow is taking tests away from essential workers because he's got access to it because he's rich.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the case at all. We can gloss over that because you're not familiar with the video. But
well, I just in general, I'm familiar with people pouncing on Rogan for really anything. I think that's
relatively benign.
Yeah. And it's a different topic, and we can definitely it's going to require more drinks on a different day, but I think part of it is because he's this dirty word now called a moderate, somebody who's in the middle, and there's just no room for that now because everyone's in their corners, you know, everyone's picked a side,
accusing him of being on the other side.
Both sides accuse him of being on the other side, and I think that's when you are on one side or the other, you only have one side pointing to you saying you're wrong. And I think what's hard right now, more than any other time in this country, is being in the middle, because you do have both sides that are pointing at you and saying you're the problem. You won't pick a side. It's like, brother, I don't want to pick a side. I just want to live. Like, I understand compromise is a thing. And one of the things that, you know, I was kind of teasing before our last break was, I think one of the big problems from this is the media. And I think Joe Rogan finds himself a victim of this. As much as he's benefited from the media and social media particularly, he finds himself a victim of this because everyone's headline hunting right now.
Oh, sure.
And
headline hunting. And that's someone who works in the media.
I know it intimately because that's what we do. We look for powerful words. We look for ways. And the reason why media is such an easy target for both sides to pick on is because both sides are right, because there is bias. It's not political bias. It's bias towards sensationalism, because we have to get clicks. And people who are in the middle about stuff, who are just your average person, do not click. It's the people on the fringes that we have to appeal to.
Sure.
It's that 40% on each side that are going to be triggered to click. And so you are monetarily incentivized
to come up with the best headline.
Yes, the best headline, the most salacious headline that you can find to motivate someone to click on your content, to think that you have something or a viewpoint or a piece of information that another outlet does, because we're in competition with everything.
Sure.
Everything is our competition. Netflix, Hulu, Xfinity, like everything is our competition, because you can pull out your phone and literally listen to any piece of music that's ever been recorded. You can watch any show that's ever been, you know, put on TV or on film. You have access to more media and more entertainment than you have in your entire life. Like in the history of man, we've never had more access to this much information. And so because of that, for-profit-based media companies have to find new innovative ways of getting your attention.
To stay alive.
Yes. And what that requires is making the most clickbaity, salacious, like just inflammatory headlines, using the most inflammatory words that they can. And so that's what we're all doing, is headline hunting. And like I said, I don't think it's based on, you know, political agenda per se. I think there are certainly outlets that do benefit from that. But I think where we're at as a society is that we have a problem where media is struggling to find their place. You have people that are unqualified media that are now have positioned themselves as media.
Whoa, just no personal attacks here. Yeah, no. We're supposed to be friends.
I was pointing at me. So we're in a position to where everyone's fighting for your attention for a piece of content. And so where we're at now is that we're all in this dangerous game to where we keep upping the ante of what inflammatory thing can I propose that will get your attention? And at some point, there's a ceiling on that. At some point, there's a ceiling on how high you can get. It's not sustainable.
It's like getting your adrenaline going indefinitely. Your adrenaline has to have a dip. You've got to calm down at some point.
And the byproduct of that is a mass distrust of the media, which is exactly where we're at right now. There is a mass distrust of the media. And never is that more dangerous than a time like this, when we rely on the dissemination of information. But the dissemination of toxic information is worse than, you know, a dissemination of limited information. Because right now, the actual facts are very limited. We don't know. We're still learning so much about the virus itself. But the dissemination of toxic information, we go into the finger pointing, the blaming, like who's at fault? Who could have done this better? We're still talking about what we could have done better, not for the purposes of doing it better in the future.
I'm a bit sick of the political commentary on Facebook alone.
Yes.
Everyone calling everyone else an idiot, and that their opinions don't matter. And the whole thing is just a bit exhausting and makes me want to drink more. Speaking of which, you want a little more?
I would like a little bit more, absolutely.
Yeah, there's one thing I did want to address on the show. So apparently, this is just some... For those who are local to Houston are very familiar with this. Over the past 2 months, distilleries in Texas have donated nearly $6 million in free hand sanitizer to first responders, frontline healthcare workers, and essential business employees, especially here in Houston. William Price Distillery is a brand new distillery, mm-hmm. and they literally signed the lease. They're building out their distillery. The very first product on the line isn't even... It's not even booze.
Right.
It is alcohol.
It has alcohol, yeah.
It's hand sanitizer, yeah. Right?
That's amazing.
And then you have places like Whitmire's. Whitmire's has donated, I know, almost 10,000 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 gallons to hospitals. And that story got picked up by Fox News as well. And then you have places like Gulf Coast. Gulf Coast Distillers, the largest distillery west of the Mississippi. I can't talk today. Is it the alcohol? Numb my mouth.
You're a pro.
The largest distillery west of the Mississippi, they have produced, as of 2 weeks ago, over 100,000 gallons that they've donated. In that same amount of time, these Texas distillers have added over $4 million in additional expenses to make that sanitizer. Collectively, distillery revenues for on-site sales have dropped nearly 80%, and these distilleries are not asking for a bailout. However, the Texas Whiskey Association, Spencer Whelan, he's been on the show, If you go to stillstrongtx.com, there's a very simple form that all you've got to do is put your name and your email address and hit submit, and they will automatically blast an email to the governor. They are trying to get a couple of key TABC rules lifted temporarily during this time to allow them to be able to sell more than just two bottles every 30 days from the distillery, to allow delivery of bottles if they want, you know, your Uber Goes, your Uber Eats, and all that sort of stuff to be able to deliver food to places. They want to be able to deliver their booze. And then, of course, you have places in other states like Kentucky and California, maybe you've even done it too, but they've lifted the restrictions for mailing spirits, and they're putting the burden on the buyer. So if it's illegal in Texas for you to mail spirits currently, and it is, and you receive a shipment from a place in Kentucky, then the legal burden is on you, the consumer. The distillery will be happy to ship it to you. There's a few things that they're just trying to get lifted temporarily to allow these distilleries to continue to be able to support hand sanitizer production and just to stay afloat. They're not looking for a bailout. They're not asking for money. They're asking for a bit of courtesy. And it's something that I think everyone can do. If you go to stillstrongtx.com, that's still, STILL, strongtx.com, fill out the form. You can basically let your governor know what you think about this whole thing and support those who've supported us. So definitely check it out. Things are blowing up here. So they've got quite a bit of support so far. I mean, just hearing about Whitmire's thing, Fox and Friends picked up on it, did a whole story about it. So it's so bizarre. So such weird times right now.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you think of the Four Roses?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I think one of the byproducts of this that's really encouraging is I do think you get to see unfortunately, you see the worst of some people, but I think the bright side of it is you see the best of some people. There are some people that really step, and industries that are stepping up, and that's really awesome to see. I mean, obviously, the distillation of much-needed hand sanitizer is a huge thing right now. It's like, it's one of the things that I think is underreported, is that these distilleries are getting hand sanitizer out there into the public and making that available.
Yeah, as far as I know, I can't think of I can think of one, but I haven't checked on it in a while. There's one distillery I know of, but literally every other distillery in the state of Texas I know of is pumping out hand sanitizer for their local markets just to keep people safe and clean. And, you know, I to be honest with you guys, can I give a little bit of criticism feedback? You should have just made, you know, 180 proof light whiskey or just below that, you know, between 160 and 180 so that we could drink it. and then you can sell more for it while it could still function as hand sanitizer. Because if I recall correctly, in order for it to be effective hand sanitizer, it has to be at least 60%. Knob Creek 120.
Right.
Knob Creek 120 proof single barrels fit the definition of sanitizer, and you can sell it and drink it and mix it with cocktails. So I think you missed an opportunity there, guys.
I'm gonna shift gears. I'm gonna throw you a curveball, and it's not even my show, but I we've been talking about some heavy content, and so I wanted to get to some lighter content because I think that's what people are looking for too. And speaking of lighter, what's been, you know, seems like you've had a lot more time on your plate than normally. Yeah. So what are you watching these days? What's like your favorite thing you've discovered, or some of your favorite things you've discovered during this time?
So I've always been a fan of Stephen King.
Okay.
I've seen almost everything, read a lot of his books. But he is one of those people that have such a wide catalog.
Yeah.
That there's always something you haven't seen.
Sure.
Right. So I watched Gerald's Game the other night with my wife.
Okay.
It was a crazy, crazy ride. You remember 127 Hours?
Yes.
Where James Franco got his hand stuck in a rock and had to survive for a few days. Stephen King did a version of that that's based around a husband and wife who are struggling to stay connected emotionally and sexually. And they decide to get away for a weekend and retreat away from everyone else. And they, you know, handcuffs her to the bed. They're a little older couple. So he had some medical help, and he dies. And then she's still handcuffed to the bed while her dead husband is at the foot of the bed. So that's not a spoiler. That's the premise. It's in every preview going around. She has to find a way to survive while being handcuffed to what do you call it? Reinforced mm-hmm. bed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a whole thing, and hallucinations, wild animals get involved.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, it's
that was before she got trapped in the bed.
Yeah. No, the whole thing was just so I've been catching up on, and the fact that the Stephen King book / film,
yeah.
it kind of, you know, there's going to be some wild factor to it. So
sure.
We have just, my wife and I have watched movie after movie. I did a puzzle for the first time in my life, 550 pieces. I wanted to murder my wife by the end of it, but. Other than that, it's been a lot of drinking.
Yeah. Puzzles and Monopoly games, I think, are the number one
cause for divorce. Abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I watched Parasite, and
so did I.
And it, so good.
You loved it?
I loved it. I really did. I loved it. Did you like it?
Okay, so
I'm gonna
okay. I liked it. Okay. But let me preface something.
Okay.
I'm gonna say what I think of it,
okay.
Then I'm going to provide a criticism.
Okay.
I'll preface it with the word spoiler alert just so you guys can duck out.
Yeah.
But so I loved the film.
Okay.
Thought it was great.
Yeah.
Trying to convince my wife to watch a Korean film.
Sure,
that's
subtitled.
Yeah. She's like, sounds lame, right?
Yeah.
Plus, the first time I tricked her into doing that was Old Boy.
Okay.
And Old Boy had some real sick plots,
sure,
twist and turn, and it scarred her. She was like, I don't want to watch some, what crazy Korean film are you going to show
me?
Loved it. Great film.
Yeah.
Now is my criticism.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. I'll give you 10 seconds here. At the end, he writes a letter to his dad.
Right.
Saying, hey, I have decided that I'm going to become rich and buy this house.
Yeah.
And then the day that I buy the house, all you have to do is come up from the basement.
Yep.
He writes that, then mm-hmm. it shows it.
Yeah.
And I thought, if it was that simple to become rich the whole time, why didn't you just do that?
Yeah.
Why don't you just write a letter to yourself?
Right.
But it turns out that was a dream of...
Yeah, it was false. It was a false end.
I was drinking, went right over my head. So the ending was a false end. I criticized it on Facebook, and my sister was like, no, that's not
what... You didn't stay for when it faded back.
Yeah. So when it faded out, I didn't stay for when it faded back, and I didn't...
Gotcha, yeah.
I missed the ending altogether.
Yeah. Now, that is critical because
I had a little help at the time. It was a little
busy. Yeah. I can definitely see how that would be. Yeah, that would be big because the ending doesn't land if you don't see the fade back up and then you realize that was just a dramatization of what he was writing.
What he was hoping for.
Yeah, versus what was actually happening. So now I only brought that up because that is definitely not a movie that I would probably make time for, a Korean, you know, subtitled film.
Have you never seen Old Boy?
No, I know the premise of it. Yeah,
you know the plot twist?
No,
okay,
I don't.
Yeah. You'd love it.
Okay.
Old Boy was great, and there's also another one which is kind of a weirder. Train to Busan was I think it's a Korean film. I apologize. I'm not racist if I was wrong, but it's about a zombie breakout on a train to Busan.
Okay.
And how each passenger car deals with this sort of thing.
Interesting.
It's a fantastic film if you're into the suspense of zombie films. But Old Boy is insanely good. The way it was shot, you know, the John Wick style wide angle fight scenes
mm-hmm.
make for expertise in choreographing versus shaky camera.
Yeah.
This film was great. I loved it. Loved every part of it. I just missed the end, and I hate. I consider myself somewhat knowledgeable in movies. When you miss something like that, and then you're like, the ending was bullshit.
Because
then I feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
But there's a thing in a plot device used in movies called Deus Ex Machina,
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
someone is say it's a bullshit.
Right.
Sorry. 11 minutes, 15 seconds, third segment. A device used that basically when the main protagonist is about to die, something random saves him, which could only be put in as an excuse to save him.
Yeah.
So it's a poor writing device.
Sure.
And I thought the ending was like that, where he's like, I'm just going to be rich, and then I'll save my dad. And it's like, oh, okay, well.
And that's funny you say that because it's meant to make you think that. Like, it's made. I think that's the whole point. And that's the brilliance of the film, is that it makes you feel... different ways throughout different parts of the movie. There's a lot of levity in it. There's a lot of things that, you know, will make you laugh.
Tons of levity.
There is things that are incredibly dramatic and suspenseful. There are things that are just downright gory. And so I think kind of the waltz through all of the genres is such an interesting
cinematic experience.
Yeah, it really is, because they're like, we're not going to pick a lane. We're just going to pick all the lanes. We're going to do all the things because, you know, that's interesting. And I just I can see why it won. Is it better than all the other ones? I couldn't tell you because I haven't watched all the other films. I think The Irishman, and I think that's probably all the films that I've consumed.
That's
out of
seven films right there.
Yeah, it is seven films.
It's 17 hours long. Yeah. Fun fact, it wasn't makeup on Robert De Niro's face. It was him actually aging while they filmed.
Did you like that?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, there was some criticism over the length of time, and I get it.
Yeah.
It still emanates a classic.
Yeah, no, for
you
sure.
You know, a classic. What's the director's name?
Scorsese.
Scorsese. Like, yeah. There's a reason why Casino and all these like great old films just
still hold up. Yeah.
It feels like a classic.
Yeah.
Scorsese film, even though it's a new film.
Yeah.
Even though it's a little long.
Yeah.
Still was fantastic.
I think I liked it. It's a very, very, very good film. Obviously,
a lot of it could have been trimmed up, though.
Yeah, I think it could have been tightened up. It feels its length, whereas a movie like Casino is long and doesn't really feel its length. Like that movie really flies for me, you know, considering how long that film is. And I just never really am at I'm really never noticing the pacing. Whereas The Irishman, I feel like once Hoff is off the screen, I feel like that movie comes to, you know, almost a halt. Like it really crawls towards the end.
The Irishman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Al Pacino was really the shining
character. Oh, so good.
Because you are like screaming at him to shut up, to stop.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah, and it was so good. It's why you know, you don't kill Nicky in Casino until the end of the film, you know what I mean? Like that, cuz Nicky's just so good. You know, and so I don't know, man. When I watched it, I immediately just go, man, I want to go watch Casino. Like, yeah. You know, and I know, like, that's not even really considered, I mean, it's considered a great film, but I know, like, at the time it was kind of mixed pain. They felt like it was a cheap version of Scorsese. And now we look back at it and go, it's amazing. But maybe time will be even better than this film, where people will look back on it and recognize it for the masterpiece that so many people feel that it is.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, so sure, it's in the same vein as a lot of Scorsese's work. But even using some of the same actors, they didn't play the same characters.
Yeah,
you know, Vince Vaughn, a few people in Hollywood are kind of known for years in one particular type of role.
Right.
Vince Vaughn was always Vince Vaughn, always.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Joe Pesci in this film was so much. He wasn't the Joe Pesci in Casino,
right? Right.
The manic, crazy person that he was, right? Robert De Niro was more quiet than normal, right? He was a bit different,
right?
I will say there was a couple of scenes that looked like complete garbage, and that curb stomping scene,
that was bad.
It was so badly
that was really
shot,
bad, yeah.
And you can tell his age.
Yeah,
it was garbage.
Yeah,
but. Other than that, the
and there's
line,
so many things you can do camera wise to, you know, trickery, make that wide. And you have to go like, man, like how did no one point at that and say like, that's not a good looking scene?
They probably did it 40 takes and it still wasn't good, so
right.
They just gave up.
I mean, but you could do like a stunt double. You could have a stunt double come in there. You crop the image to where it's just the stunt double kicking. And it's that simple. Like, that's it. Like, that's the entire... It's no more complicated than that. Let me tell you something, Scorsese. Let me tell you I can make a film. I just thought... You're right. And that's picking nits for sure. Like, because it's a really, really good film. I really enjoyed it. My only criticism was, like, what you brought it was just length of time.
Length of time and a couple of poor shots. But Yeah, a couple of poor shots. Yeah, so we ran out of time. I'm glad we can come on. I'm glad we can talk about everything that's going on. If anything, I hope this was cathartic for a lot of people. It is a tough tone. I will say this. I'm going to preface at the beginning as well when I do the intro. For those that are listening, I would encourage this. There are plenty of reasons to be angry at things that you see on your Facebook feed and in the news. I would encourage you to please find a way to at least understand that everyone is in this right now, and no one knows. There's never been anything like this in the history of the United States. No one knows how this is going to play out. No one, but people are afraid and sometimes convinced of what they think will play out. Cut them a break. Unfollow them for a little bit. Don't unfriend them. Don't block them. Don't be angry. Don't engage. Trying to have these in Facebook debates over who's stupid and why they're stupid. Look, people are just scared right now. Please cut everyone a break. Have another drink. Put down the phone. Go watch a movie. Go watch Old Boy. Go watch Parasite. Spend time with the family and just cut everyone a break. Everyone is completely insane right now. So, anyways, thanks for doing this, man. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.